Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
You're listening to Catholic Baltimore, and this is Sean Kane. We're here with Auxiliary Bishop of Baltimore, Bishop Dennis Madden. Bishop Madden, thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome, Sean. Great to be with you.
Bishop, you have quite a unique background for a bishop. Could you share a little bit about your career path with our listeners?
Sure. I guess going back to the very beginning, I hope I don't offend anyone, but I was born in the Bronx. I was raised in the Bronx. And as I was growing up, I guess among the boys, that there were three main groups. I think one group either ended up being policemen or firemen. Another group actually went into religious life or the seminary. Probably the third group ended up in jail for one reason or another. So that's where all these things begin to come together. I was a Benedictine before coming to the Archdiocese, and I had hoped to continue with the Benedictines. We were missionary Benedictines, looked forward to serving in Africa. And the abbot had other thoughts. He thought I should get a degree in psychology to work as a counselor for our seminary. So I was sent to Columbia University in New York, and I got a degree there. And then I went on to Notre Dame for another degree in psychology. And then I came to Baltimore to do an internship at University of Maryland Hospital. I lived at St. Martin's Parish on Fayette and Fulton. At that time, the Capuchins were there. It's a wonderful, wonderful community there. I loved living there. And so I was doing my internship there, and at the same time, we opened up a clinic for priests and nuns. In those days, it was not so common if someone went to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist for a priest or nun to do this. So we had a specialized clinic. At the same time, I worked with a wonderful psychiatrist, Dr. John Lyon, and we treated primarily violent patients. So I was working there and serving at St. Martin's, also serving at St. Gregory's over in Baker and Gilmore. And then Archbishop Borders, I think under the influence of Father Hesburgh, had asked me to go to Jerusalem to a place called Tantour. It's owned by the Holy See, and it's supported by Notre Dame. And I was supposed to go there for 2 years, ended up being there 9 years. But I loved it there. It was a wonderful blessing to be in the Holy Land.
Now, what kind of work did you do there?
There I worked for what was called the Pontifical Mission, and that's a relief and development agency of the Holy See. And so I worked in the office of Jerusalem. We had clinics, schools, convents, seminaries, housing projects, labor projects that we supported. And it was all around the West Bank, Gaza, a little bit in Israel. Israel has a fantastic social system there. They really weren't that much in need of assistance from us. But we did work with the many, many Israelis, the Jews, and at Hebrew University, at Martin Buber Institute, along with Bethlehem University with the De La Salle brothers. It was a wonderful experience.
And from there, what point did your path cross with the Catholic Near East Welfare Association?
That was actually, the Pontifical Mission is part of the Catholic Near East Welfare. The Catholic Near East Welfare Agency is also part of the Holy See, and it works in those areas, those lands, where the Eastern churches predominate. Propagation of the faith is where the Western Catholic churches predominate. And so that was actually part of it. And when I was working in Jerusalem, I was there about 9 years. And then Cardinal Keeler asked me to work with Cardinal O'Connor, who was the head of Catholic Near East Welfare in New York. And at that point, I became responsible for all the relief and development activities in throughout the whole Middle East. And that was Jordan and Egypt and Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, and then also all of India and parts of Africa, Ethiopia, Eritrea.
There was one major project that you worked on in your time in the Middle East. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was a great project, and that was a project was the restoration of the dome of the Rotunda of the Holy Sepulchre. And this project was long in the making. It was a project that took 4 years. Two of those years were spent negotiating. The Holy Sepulchre, the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre, is maintained by, they call them three custodians, the Greek Orthodox, the Armenian Orthodox, and the Franciscans, the Custos. And each of them has a portion of the Holy Sepulchre that they're responsible for, almost have an ownership of it. And they are very, very careful, according to a status quo, which is established years ago, that no one infringe on their areas. So having a agency of the Holy See come along just rose some suspicions along the eyes of the Orthodox, and I could well appreciate that. It took us then about 2 years to complete the project, and it was a wonderful project, but it did take a lot of negotiating back and forth. I met on a weekly basis with the two patriarchs and the Custos individually, and then I met on a weekly basis with all three. And that was always an interesting meetings that we had.
I suspect that that project gave you a little bit of insight into the delicate diplomatic relations in that region.
It was very good. It was trying to win over their confidence to get them to trust me a little bit. And of course, in dealing with the patriarchs or the Custos, they were operating at one level, but they had their teams. And their teams were really responsible for maintaining the status quo. And those were the priests and brothers, I think, they were most suspicious of me and what I was doing.
You mentioned trust. And from your vantage point, your observation of the situation in the Middle East, how much a factor is the trust and the lack of trust say, for example, the Palestinians and the Israelis have for each other? How much of a factor is that trust?
I think you hit it right in the head, Sean. It is an issue of trust. There's so much distrust. And when I worked there, we had a number of projects. And one project we started a small, separate foundation. I'll call the Accord Foundation. And there we had Israeli Jews and the Palestinians, mostly Muslims, Christians, of course, as well, but the majority were Muslims, which reflected the population, the general population. And we got Israeli doctors from Hadassah Hospital working in Gaza. We had Palestinian doctors from the Gaza going up to Hadassah Hospital to sort of sharpen some of their skills. We had professors from Hebrew University working with student Arab and Palestinian students, helping them along the way. There was really a very, very good working relationship, and we never really dealt specifically with political issues, but they got to trust each other so that when someone said, oh, all Israelis, all Palestinians, the others would say, no, that's not true, that's not true. So I think that's so critical, is to have that trust. And if you look at the general populations, if you look at the general populations of the Israelis and the Palestinians, the majority do have a working relationship. When I lived at Tantour, there was a wall around Tantour, and Palestinians who didn't have proper papers to go into Jerusalem sometimes go over the wall and go in, and at the other side of the wall would be Israeli contractors, Israeli women waiting to pick up their nannies to take care of their children. So there was always that working trust and that working relationship. And I think that's where the majority of the people are.
What do you think is the primary obstacle to peace? It seems like it's the age-old question, striving for peace in the Middle East. Will we ever get there?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is that we've come to a place where we say, oh, they've been fighting for years. They'll never change. They'll never solve
easy
that.
To throw your hands up.
Yeah, really. And I don't want to say anything, give a wrong impression. I've thrown my hands up in the air many times. What is this? Why is this happening this way? But really, there is so much, as I mentioned, working with the people there, that I saw that there's a lot of hope if we went there. I think what's required now, one of the things is good, brave, courageous leadership on both sides. When I lived there, I think that it may sound strange, but I think we came the closest to that with Prime Minister Rabin and Arafat. They had no real love for each other. In fact, they didn't like each other. But by the grace of God, they both came to a point where they felt they had to, for the welfare of their people, to just stop acting that way. And so they did. They began to work on things together. And it was unfortunate that it was shortly after that the Prime Minister Rabin was assassinated. And that really then ended that period of negotiations. They had grown to really have a working relationship, a trustful relationship, and I feel we could have made a lot of headway. So it really means someone who is a leader in both communities, who's willing to step out in front and be a leader leading towards peace and not towards repeating old slogans and so on. And that's needed, I think, on both sides.
Well, Bishop Mann, thank you for being with us today. For more information about the Catholic Church's efforts in the Holy Land and throughout the Middle East, please visit www.usccb.org.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world from the Catholic Review. This Sunday, April 12th, Holy Rosary in Fells Point celebrates Divine Mercy Sunday, an opportunity for Catholics to experience God's forgiveness. As part of the celebration, the parish invites all to venerate its new Divine Mercy image, which was painted exactly according to Jesus' instructions when he appeared to a Polish nun, now Saint Faustina Kowalska, in 1931. The image will be the focal point for an updated and revamped Archdiocesan Shrine of the Divine Mercy coming soon. In Annapolis, Governor Larry Hogan recently introduced a supplemental budget that includes a $5 million grant program for businesses that donate to non-public school assistance organizations. The program would help non-public school families with tuition assistance and other educational expenses. The fate of the proposal, which has the strong support of the state's Catholic bishops, is in the hands of state lawmakers. This year's legislative session was scheduled to end tomorrow, but it will likely be extended to finalize the budget. From Nairobi, Kenya, comes the report that an African cardinal called on Easter worshippers to commit to praying for peace and security in their homeland after militants attacked a college campus days earlier. Cardinal John Njue of Nairobi also condemned the April 2nd attack by the Somali-based Al-Shabaab militants at Garissa University College, in which Christian students were targeted. Cardinal Njue read a message of condolence from Pope Francis to the congregation at Holy Family Basilica in Nairobi. In his message, Pope Francis condemned the assault by Somali militants, calling it an act of senseless brutality. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Christopher Gunty.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're here today with Eileen Finn. She's the director of the Office of Deaf Ministry for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Eileen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
The Mass can be a beautiful experience. The prayers, the music, the homily, all of it adds up to a very powerful and spiritually moving experience. But for people who cannot hear, they experience the Mass in a different way. Isn't that right?
It is. There's two different ways that deaf people can access Mass. One is through interpreters, sign language interpreters. The other is if the priest himself can sign, is either deaf or hearing and can sign. And I call it an ASL Mass, and it's a different experience.
And that's American Sign Language?
American Sign Language,
right.
Yeah.
And for those who aren't familiar with it, are there different types of sign language?
Yes. Each spoken language or each culture has its own sign language. People in America and in Canada use American Sign Language, but there's also Irish Sign Language, British Sign Language, Italian, Portuguese, Chinese, as many spoken languages as you can think of. There's usually a sign.
Now, how did you become involved in this ministry?
I was a sign language interpreter. I learned that in college. That's where I learned to sign, and I became a sign language interpreter. And then I got involved in working in the church because there's little access to the church for deaf people. There's very few interpreters who sign in church. And I just was asked to start doing it, and I did. And then
how did you develop an interest in learning sign language when you were in college? Is it just something that always fascinated you, or did you know someone who was deaf? Or
no, I had never met a deaf person till I was in college. I was at a Catholic Mass for at Christmas, and they had a group that did songs in sign. And it was the first time I had ever really noticed it, and I just, like a light bulb went off in my head. I needed to learn. And I came back from Christmas break and changed my major and became an interpreting major. And
so. For deaf people, you say that for a lot of them, the church isn't accessible. How, without the benefit of a priest who can sign or an interpreter, how would they experience Mass? Would they come to Mass? Would they participate at all?
No, not really. They don't, because they're not going to understand anything that's going on. Sometimes, you know, people will hand them a missalet and say, oh, you could just read along. But that doesn't let them participate in Mass, because they don't know. If they're just reading it, they don't know where you are in the Mass. They wouldn't understand the homily. So then they can't really be fully active in the Mass, so many of them don't come.
And I imagine for those, like, family members who, if they had to interpret it for them, then they're not being able to participate in the Mass properly.
Right, and just because you can sign doesn't mean you can interpret. So there are parents who sign, and yes, they end up interpreting for their children, but they don't have the skills. Interpreting is a skill.
So in other words, being able to sign what you're hearing? Is that what you
mean?
Be
able to take a spoken language, take it into your head and change it into a totally different language. American Sign Language is completely different from English. It has its own syntax and grammar structure. It's more concepts than words, and so it's completely different.
Which parishes in the Archdiocese offer Masses in sign language, or have interpreters, or have priests who can celebrate the Mass for people who are deaf?
We have 16 parishes in the Archdiocese that have interpreters on a regular basis. Most of them are every Sunday. So there's two that have Saturday Masses. Do you want me to name them all?
That'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have brought my list. In Anne Arundel County, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton has a Saturday Mass. Our Lady of the Fields is 9:30 on Sundays. In Baltimore County, St. Charles Borromeo on Sunday mornings at 8:30. Immaculate Heart of Mary every week at 10:30, and then St. Rita's at 11:15. In the city, St. Matthew's has an 11. St. Vincent de Paul has a 9:30 a.m. And then in Frederick County, Holy Family in Middletown has a 5, Saturday night Mass. St. Ignatius in Imesville at 10. St. John's at 9 in the morning, and St. Timothy's has 9:45. Hartford County, St. Ignatius in Hickory has a 9 on Sundays. Howard County, St. John's in Columbia, there's one at Wild Lake at 9 a.m. and one at Oakland Mills the first and third. They do second and fourth at Wild Lake and first and third at Oakland Mills at 11:30. St. Louis and Clarksville sometimes has their Saturday night Mass interpreted. Church of the Resurrection has a 10:30 every Sunday. And then in Washington County, St. Joseph's, you can contact the church, and they don't really have a set schedule, so it's different. There's we don't really have a priest that works with the deaf in the diocese. There's one or two guys who can sign, and they sometimes do stuff. I work with a deaf priest who's an oblate of St. Francis de Sales, and he comes about 6 times a year and does Mass and sign. And in May, we're going to have a pilgrimage in the city with him.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, other than the Mass, how else can Catholics who are deaf participate in the life of their faith? You know, I guess in what ways are they challenged to do that? And then in what ways are we able to help them beyond just experiencing the Mass?
We have a couple of things that we offer. I do religious ed with some students at the Maryland School for the Deaf in Columbia. We have a program it's every other Tuesday now. It used to be every Tuesday. And then we try to do some adult faith formation. We just had Father Mike Depchick, the oblate that I work with, was just here last weekend, and he had a thing on Saturday afternoon in about Lenten, different types of prayer that people could use, and he had a whole session with some deaf adults on that. So when he's here, I try to use him to do some adult faith formation kind of things. But it's really limiting. I don't really have a lot. You know, I'm a one-person office, and so there's only so much I can do.
Yeah, I want to help. Yeah. I've been curious, for people who can hear, do you have any tips or suggestions for how they might engage? You know, we're constantly being asked to evangelize and to be welcoming, and if someone is clearly deaf and it's evident to people around them and they want to reach out to them, do you have any suggestions for how they might do that?
Well, I mean, the best thing to do is to learn some sign, or just to make the effort. Mm-hmm. Deaf people are very appreciative of people who make the effort. And Father Michael Triplett was at Resurrection when he was first ordained, and he took the basic sign language class that they offered there at the parish. And so he learned a few signs, and he would greet the deaf people every week, and they just loved that. Yeah. And then he would use some signs in his homily. So any effort that you make to just reach out to them, make them feel welcome, say hello. And deaf people are great evangelizers, too. There are deaf people who, you know, invite their friends, come see what's going on in our parish. Mm. They love their parishes and invite people.
What are some of the challenges in your work, other than not enough hands on deck?
Well, that is the biggest challenge. I don't have enough interpreters. I think one of the biggest challenges is getting the word out that, you know, the events that we're having, making sure that people know what's going on. We're going to have a Deaf Faith Festival in April at Our Lady of Perpetual Help in Ellicott City, in conjunction with the Archdiocese of Washington, their deaf office. So getting that information out. The other thing is training interpreters. I have interpreters who are great interpreters, but they don't know the Catholic signs. And so I just started having monthly webinars on Saturdays. We're going to have our second one this Saturday. And they're an hour and a half. And, you know, people can do it from home. I do it from home. And we just talk about scripture, how to sign the scriptures, how to sign different parts of the Mass. The different terms that we have in the Catholic liturgy are, you know, not things that you see everywhere else. You know, different words that we use, like begotten and consubstantial. And
the easy ones. Stuff.
Yeah, the easy ones.
So I would imagine that technology, like, just for all people in all walks of life, has actually changed life for people who are deaf as well. Is it? Mm-hmm. Are you finding that it's making things easier, more accessible?
Oh yeah. You know, when you think about when the telephone was invented, that shut off the deaf from, you know, that type of communication. They couldn't really use the telephone until the TTY was invented in the, I'm going to say 50s or 60s. I'm not sure, but texting, you know, stuff on the internet has really opened up the world for them. Video phones, FaceTime. So that they can talk to people who are far away, but they can see them, so they can sign. But texting has been a huge thing. I mean, they jumped right on that they could text something to you. You read it, they read it. It's, you know, and we all do that too. It's a media that they love and have embraced, and it's really opened up the world for them.
All the information that we covered today, including locations that parishes that have masses for people with who are deaf, is available through the website of the Archdiocese?
Yes.
That's Eileen Finn from the Office of Deaf Ministry for the Archdiocese of Baltimore. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Sean.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and Weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues, and one-of-a-kind rosaries, The Basilica Gift Shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter, as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore, or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
For over 200 years, the Archdiocese of Baltimore's Catholic schools have welcomed families of all faiths, providing generations of students with an academically excellent, value-based education taught in a Christ-centered environment. With a 99% graduation rate, the highest in the nation, and a 98% college attendance rate, Catholic school graduates are better prepared to succeed in college and beyond. But Catholic schools offer more than an education. They offer tradition, family, faith, and the opportunity for students to grow as individuals and as future leaders in their community. Discover these and other benefits of a Catholic school and learn more about why Catholic schools are an unparalleled value in education in the Baltimore region. Call 1-800-5-CATHOLIC or visit www.archbalt.org. Catholic schools, a place to grow.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.